Hello, happy Friday, and thank you for tuning in to another episode of our PAC Politics Podcast. Our podcast is brought to you by our organization, our United Resource PAC. If you don't know, we are a tax-exempt political organization. I am your host, Brittany McDowell, and again, thank you so much for taking time out of your very busy Friday to listen to our PAC Politics Podcast. On today's episode, well, there really isn't still any movement on the passage of a stimulus bill. So, no, I will not be telling you about the passage of a stimulus bill because it has not yet occurred. I want to pose the question today. How can you know that passing a stimulus bill is not of priority for Mitch McConnell? It's very evident. Anyone at this point who would dispute that, anyone who contends otherwise, anyone who says, no, Mitch McConnell absolutely does in fact want to pass a stimulus package, they're lying to you because it's abundantly clear, and I'm going to tell you how. So sit back, stay tuned to this episode. I'm not going to promise that it's going to be our shortest episode, but I'll try not to make it too lengthy either. That said, let's go ahead and let's jump in. Look, I'm going to give it to you straight. The Supreme Court seat is the only thing that matters to Mitch McConnell. Quite frankly, he would rather have the Senate focus on the passage or on the giving of the Supreme Court seat to Amy Coney Barrett, as opposed to helping millions of not just Americans, like individual Americans, but rather than genuinely helping businesses. And yes, I know that he's proposing the extension of the PPP. Matter of fact, this past Tuesday, what we saw from Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell was we saw him essentially urging the White House to not strike a coronavirus relief bill with the Speaker of the House, Nancy Pelosi, before the election. And he literally flat out said that, look, if you pass this bill, if you make this happen before the election, you are going to derail my plans to confirm Amy Coney Barrett as the next Supreme Court Justice, which he wants to do early next week. So he's not disguising what his plan is. He is not kind of making you have to kind of guess what his moves. He's like very blatantly stating why he wants to do, you know, what he wants to do. Now, the question of why he wants to do this isn't so hard to really guess at either. I've mentioned before that the Trump administration is at odds with what most Senate Republicans want. I'm not going to get into the specifics of that now. I'll probably talk about that a little bit later in this episode, but in this moment, I'm not going to prolong this segment by doing that. But they are at odds, right? And quite frankly, while the Trump administration is fighting really hard for re-election, they're fighting really hard for another term. You have a lot of Senate Republicans who are not up for re-election, so they aren't as focused on this election cycle. They aren't as adamant about getting an actual stimulus package passed because, well, quite frankly, they don't need to worry about the ramifications in their mind of not helping the American people, because November 3rd to them is just going to be another day that, you know, comes and goes, because they are not worried about re-election because they're not up for re-election. So that said, the president on the flip side understands that he needs to get a stimulus package passed because he is eminently impacted by either the passage or the failure of a passage for a stimulus package. So that said, Mitch McConnell, he's like, you know, we've got to get this person on the Supreme Court justice, or excuse me, on the Supreme Court, because even if Trump loses re-election, we can have an impact from a conservative perspective by having a conservative justice on the court. You will, they will essentially, what they're looking to do is they're looking to swing the ideology of the court, so to say, if the, the court, even though it's not supposed to really have an ideology, point of it is, at this point, with Justice Ginsburg essentially dying, right? She was very liberal, very, very liberal. And by replacing her with a conservative, Republicans have an opportunity to swing the courts. Now, here's the deal. Why does this matter? This matters because, as it currently stands, justices are, they have a lifelong, they have a job for life, right? And so while Congress people and presidents have terms, if they can swing the court in a conservative direction, it doesn't matter if they hold a job or not. It doesn't matter if President Trump keeps his job as president or not, because they secured that justice. Quite frankly, I am not certain that Mitch McConnell has faith, as most Americans, well, not most, but as some Americans don't when they look at the numbers, I'm not sure that they have faith that Trump is going to retain the presidency. That's why, quite frankly, you look and you see many Republicans actually starting to distance themselves from the president, because it's becoming clear that unless certain things that, I'm not going to say they can't happen, but certain things that are not likely to happen, unless those things happen, it is unlikely that Trump will retain the presidency. So for this reason, Mitch McConnell has in his mind the idea that they need to focus on the long game. And the long game is focusing on getting a Supreme Court justice who is conservative in nature. And you do that by capitalizing on the opportunity that they have in the death of Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg. So that said, Pelosi, she acknowledged that, you know, I talked, I think, I don't know if it was the last episode or the one before the last, I mentioned how Pelosi said, hey, look, we've got 48 hours to make it happen. This is make it or break it. But Pelosi, she's at this point where she has acknowledged, okay, that, you know, not that 48 hours, she's not saying, well, that was kind of a pointless thing. What she's saying, though, is that unless we have legislation that is written by the end of this week, which is today, today is the end of the week, right? Unless we get legislation that is written by the end of today, the chance of that legislation reaching President Trump's desk before Election Day, it's not going to happen. I have been saying time and time and time and time again for well over a month at this point, look, I'm going to be very frank with you guys. Politicians understand that voters having hope works in their favor. Even if there really is no hope, as long as they can sell you on the idea of hope, they become more favorable in your eyes. That said, Nancy Pelosi is selling you on the idea of hope. We're not just looking at a situation where time is working against you. Listen to me. You have more than time that is working against you. You have an unwillingness from Senate Republicans who cannot be bypassed in this equation. There is no way to get stimulus without Senate Republicans on board. Anyone who tries to tell you otherwise does not understand how you take a bill and you make it a law. You need Senate Republicans because they hold the Senate. Unless you can convert some of them, not all of them, but unless you can convert some of them, which they have demonstrated time and time and time again, that conversion is not likely, unless you can convert them, nothing is going to happen. So no matter if Nancy comes back today and she says, you know what, we've through some miracle, we've got until next Monday. And by next Monday, if we can have a deal, we can have it before the election. Do you notice, As much as I have praised the attempts of Nancy Pelosi in these stimulus talks, do you notice? This is where I've got to call Nancy out. She constantly keeps moving the goalpost. That's not to say she's not making genuine efforts, but at this point, what you have to realize is that she is selling you on hope. Hope and change worked in 2008. Hope and change is not what is going to get Americans' bills paid. Hope and change is not what's going to reopen the economy. We need more than hope and change. And yes, I appreciate what she is doing, and I appreciate the fact that she recognizes that we can't just take a bucket of water and throw it on a fire and say, oh, well, we've attempted to put the fire out by throwing water on it. She understands that we need a water hose. She understands that we need more, but she needs to be honest with the people. Be honest with the people, Nancy, and tell them, look, you need to plan your budgets, your household budgets, knowing that you were not going to receive a $1,200 check probably until February. And that is assuming that we can get some traction come the end of January, early February. And actually, even then, if they pass it in just say early February, you're not going to see a check until March or April. Be honest, Nancy, with the people. People, quarter one of 2021 is down the drain for Americans. Be honest about it. So, you know, all these people, specifically Nancy Pelosi, calling her out in this moment, this whole, oh, we've got 48 hours, we've got 24 hours, you're selling people on hope and change. Again, that was the name of the game for 2008, that we even saw it rolled out, you know, when President Barack Obama was out there campaigning. What was it, in Pennsylvania, something with a P. He was out there campaigning, and we saw reiterations of 2008 all over again. 2008, mind you, I was out there actively campaigning myself, you know, for advocating for the election of President Obama in 2008. I was all hope and change. I was sold on it back then. But I'm telling you, that cannot work. Literally, it can't with the American people. In 2020, doesn't work. You need a new strategy, Nancy. So be honest. Yes, she might have to catch some flack for it. She might have to assume some sort of blame. But I can tell you this, if Americans are honest about it, she does not have as much blame on her as, say, Mitch McConnell. So be honest. Hey, people, you're not going to see, even if we do, for one, get it out of your mind that we're going to see anything pass before the election day. Get it out of your mind. Really, your best hope, depending on who has the House, who has the Senate, and who is the president, your best hope of anything happening will be if it's passed in February. If it's passed in February, you will not see a check. And that's if they learn from their last experience, you won't see a check until March or April. So stop selling people a pipe dream. Stop it. Stop it. Stop it. We have a lame duck session. And here's, you know, you see some people mentioning this, but we've got a lame duck session. As soon as November 3rd comes and goes, and as soon as we know who is going to be president or not be president, who's going to retain the House, who's not going to retain it, who's going to have the Senate, so on and so forth, we are going to have a lame duck session. Congress people who are not reelected, who were seeking reelection, are not going to be incentivized to do anything for you. Okay? Congress people who do retain their seats, but maybe just say they were Republicans who held the Senate, and if the Senate swings towards the House, do you think that they're going to be incentivized to do anything for you during the lame duck session? No. If anything, they are going to hold a grudge. If anything, history shows us they are not going to give two damns, 2 cents, to nothing about you American people. If Democrats end up with a situation where Republicans retain the Senate and President Trump retains the presidency, do you think that they're going to go as hard as they're going right now while they have things working in their favor, while they have things stacked against the Republicans that aren't necessarily stacked against them in the same way? Do you think they're going to go as hard for you during the lame duck session? No. Look, you all need to understand what is going on, okay? We are all being hoodwinked. And that hoodwinked we're being hoodwinked in the form of being sold hope and change. Ooh, tomorrow. Ooh, 48 hours. It's a lie. Don't believe it. Do not believe it. You are doing yourself a disservice. And especially, we hear about the emotional tolls that this time of COVID has had on people committing suicide and, you know, alcoholism and drug use and all this stuff going up. As much as politicians talk about that, they also need to talk about the impact of them selling people pipe dreams, what that is, the impact that that is having on people. People are emotionally tired of every other day thinking that their situations are going to get better. People are emotionally tired of wondering if they are going to be able to retain their health care. People are emotionally tired of wondering month in and month out. Nobody ever guessed that back in June, July, we would still be in this situation. In October. This is appalling, absolutely appalling. And American politicians need to get their stuff together or they need to get the hell out of office. Look, as you can tell, if you listen to my last segment, you can tell that at this point I'm frustrated. I'm very, 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 very frustrated. And I think that's the sentiment for a lot of Americans at this point. But let's actually speak to what the problem is right now and what the problem has been for months. The problem is and has been Senate Republicans, period, point blank. I talked very recently about one specific Senate Republican, the leading Senate Republican, Mitch McConnell, and how him and his pals for the cause of killing and destroying the American economy singularly. He is the ringleader. But as a whole, these Senate Republicans, specifically the ones who are not up for re-election, they all be damned. Seriously. They are the problem. Okay? Here's the deal. Here is the deal. I mentioned, again, Nancy Pelosi is running around here getting people high on the crack pipe of hope and change. But the problem is not that, oh, we just need a few days. And, oh, if we had a few more days. And, oh, if I talk to Steve Mnuchin. And, oh, if I talk to the president. You, Steve Mnuchin, and the president, Nancy Pelosi, can't make this happen by yourselves. You need Senate Republicans on board. And point blank, period, the problem is that Senate Republicans, there are not enough of them who are willing to vote for big spending packages. Period. As they say, period. Like, really, there is not enough of them to go along with your plan. So again, no matter how many times you and Steve meet, no matter how much the Republican president says, oh, I'll corral them, he hasn't been able to corral them to this point. So what in God's green earth, on God's green earth, makes any of us think that he can get them for something that's even more money? He can't. They have said, look, like, I don't have high blood pressure. I think I'm too young for that, but I'm well on my way when I think about this. I say all the time, a life lesson that I have learned hands down is do not believe what people tell you. Believe what they show you. And what Senate Republicans are showing us is that they don't give a damn. They don't give a hoot. They don't give a snoot. They don't care. Let it burn. Let them file bankruptcy, as Mitch McConnell has said. Again, Mitch McConnell, the leading Senate Republican, his words, let them file bankruptcy. Do you think he cares? No, because his solution for you, for the business down the street, for everyone you love, all the businesses you go to, just file bankruptcy. That is the problem. And in recent days, here's something that I want you to kind of think about too. In recent days, just how I mentioned in the previous segment, Mitch McConnell, his whole deal has been, hey, okay, well, you know, we need to not focus on this right now. We need to focus on getting Amy Comey Amy Coney Barrett. Is that ABC? Yes. No, it's ACB. ACB. Okay. Anywho, see, I get sidetracked. We need to focus on getting her appointed to the Supreme Court. Okay. Excuse me. But here's something that I kind of want you to ponder. And when we brought back our podcast, I talked about, and I questioned if, I believe Nancy Pelosi is kind of being, or how people are kind of framing her as like this nefarious actor, right? And when you think nefarious, you think someone like sneaky and like they're doing something sneaky behind the scenes and you hear them like chuckling and they're like in their trench coat. And you know what I mean? Like when I think of a nefarious actor, I kind of think of something like that. But okay, totally on a side note. So... something that I think is pretty nefarious that we need to be thinking about in relation to Mitch McConnell is that he may be, when we connect the dots, think about what I said in the last segment and what I just said, that the problem is that he cannot corral Senate Republicans. He cannot do it, nor can the president do it. Okay, you have to understand, these people, they run on an ideology of fiscal conservatism. Okay, but actually, when you look at their actual track records and what they're actually willing to support, again, look at people, what they do and not what they say. When you look at that, they are all for corporate welfare. They're not for individual welfare and helping the person. Through their belief in trickle-down economics, they believe that if they help businesses as much as they can, not if they let the free market determine what happens with businesses, as much as they talk about the free market and, oh, free market this, they are not free market capitalists. They are corporate welfareists at like the highest level, right? So when you couple the fact that they pounce around and they prance around with, oh, we're conservatives, da 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 da, and that's what they sell their base on, these people, they're not up for re-election. So they can keep going around and they can keep saying that, and they need to do that because that is the only way they are able to do what they do in terms of helping corporations. And so kind of ringing myself back to this thought about Mitch McConnell, this kind of nefarious actor here, he is telling the American people, well, okay, put it like this. Politicians, most politicians, especially politicians who retain their political office as long as Mitch McConnell has, you don't do that by being a dummy. The dummies, they either don't get in or they get in and they are out as quickly as they are in, right? Mitch McConnell, as much as people talk about him being a turtle and as much as they talk about, oh, well, I'm Mitch McConnell, and as much as people do, that is not a dumb man. Okay. And if you are out there and you're having those jokes, have at it, Haas. But at the same time, that man will intellectually run circles around so many people. How do you think that his core constituency, how could he get those people whose interests he works against on a consistent basis? How does he get those people to vote for him? You either have to believe that his constituency is really, really dumb, or you have to think that he is more intelligent in a way that he is able to manipulate them even when it works against them. But anywho, getting back to Mitch McConnell, this politician who was really intelligent, if he did not want us to know that his grandmaster plan, which sounds horrible, because one of the things that politicians are always aware of is perception, whether it be perception of, you know, what people hear or what people think and how they kind of interpret that, because perception is super, super powerful when it comes to politics. Okay. But while most of us think it sounds utterly horrible that at a time where we are being ravaged by this pandemic in terms of our physical bodies, but also our economy, we think that it's horrible that he wants to focus on getting Amy Coney Barrett on the Supreme Court. If he thought that the risks of you thinking that outweighed the benefits, trust and believe me, honey, he would not have made that out as a public statement. So that said, listen to my thought here on who I now am going to call Nefarious McConnell, right? I honestly think that he put that statement out there, that Mitch McConnell is telling people that the focus is on getting Amy Coney Barrett, ACB, on the Supreme Court, because, not because that's even really what's, well, I'm not going to say it doesn't matter, because I think that as kind of a byproduct of focusing on doing this, he gets her on the Supreme Court, which ultimately helps conservatives ideology and influence on our courts and court system and laws ultimately. But here's the deal. That is not mainly what he wants to do, right? He knows. He's a smart man. He knows he cannot secure the required votes to go ahead and get something passed. Think about it. Think about this. He said, he's been saying for a while now, for the past few weeks, he has finally transitioned, because at first he was kind of a holdout on big stimulus, but then he finally came around and he himself said, look, if the president will agree to something, I'll agree to something too. What logical sense does it make if he is willing to support something? What logical sense, especially when you understand the dire need and urgency, which we know he does, because again, this man is not a dumb man. He understands, it makes no sense that he would work against the interests that not just help him politically, but his party. It makes no sense. The only reason that you have to take the route that he is doing is because you know you don't have a road to where you know you really need to go. That's all we're dealing with. He knows that many Senate Republicans are simply opposed to additional COVID-19 aid, okay? And it has nothing to do with the Supreme Court. Obviously, yes, that's something that they want. That's, you know, but this is kind of like the cover-up story. Anybody who says that they've never lied is a liar, and you are straight from the pit of hell, as far as I'm concerned, and as far as my Bible says. But, and the Bible says the truth is not in you, right? But here's the deal. Sometimes people lie to cover up another lie. Right? The main lie here, again, is that Mitch McConnell cannot sell his base on at least enough of his base on the passage of a bigger stimulus. So, because he lies about the fact that they want stimulus when they really don't, he has to cover up that lie with the lie of, oh, well, we really just need to focus on the Supreme Court and that's more urgent. You were covering up a lie with a lie. Okay. And look, here's the deal. I'll even give you the benefit of the doubt that it's all about fiscal conservatism. Okay. But here's the deal. I sound like Joe Biden, don't I? Here's the deal. Okay. Here's the deal, right? There is a thin line between being fiscally conservative and just being flat out wrong. Okay. Think about, you know, and it boggles my mind that people like to compare like the budget of families to the budget of a federal government. Like, that is utterly, 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 utterly insane. But if you look, for instance, at the familial level and you look at someone who you think of as a saver, and as we kind of talk about fiscal conservatism, if someone is a saver and then you compare them to someone who's a penny pincher, the tone between the two, very different. Even the images, if you close your eyes and I say saver, and then you have your eyes closed still and I say penny pincher, I can guarantee you that the image in your mind, the image of the person that you associate with those two words, very, 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 very different. I want to pose something to you. When I was thinking about this whole kind of thought of fiscal conservatism, and I was thinking about, you know, just the running narrative that most people, most politicians who claim to be fiscal conservatives, the solutions that they tend to give to things. Okay. But before I get there, let me tell you something. While I'm kind of transitioning, I'm going to transition from speaking about families and individuals to kind of speaking about business and larger government economies. But when you're dealing with the average American, and you consider that whether they are an unemployed individual who received that extra $600 stimulus, or just the average American who made under a certain, who was within a certain income level, who received that $1,200 check and then that $500 per dependent, even if they managed to save any money from any form of stimulus that they received under the CARES Act, today, October 23rd, I can guarantee you for like 95% of those people, that money is gone. That money is gone. How do I know? I know this because, for starters, your high income earners weren't receiving the unemployment benefits. So that takes them out of that equation. Then on top of that, with that $1,200 check and $500 per dependent, those who made a significant amount of money at a certain level, they didn't even receive that benefit. So the people who were really doing super well, they didn't receive any of these benefits. And what we know, looking at the data, the most recent data or data from like the last few months, is that the people who really built savings, well, you had kind of two categories. You had people who were receiving that $600 per week, that additional economic or unemployment stimulus. Some of those people were able to save money, okay? But they have since they have lost that benefit at the end of July, and for most of them, they have had that lost wage assistance program. Those benefits have stopped, which were only in half. They have used any savings that they have had to kind of carry them over. That is one group of people who were kind of able to save. But in addition to that, most people who got that $1,200 were not really able to save it. They either used it immediately or they had some sort of idea that they would save it. But this whole idea that this pandemic was only going to last, you know, a few weeks, put them in a position where they had to use that money. So at this point in the game, individuals I'm very confident in the assumption, based on the data that I have looked at, that most Americans who have been benefited in some way, shape, or form from economic stimulus direct, they no longer have those funds. Okay. And so when we look at that, it's, you know, literally, and some people were so bad off literally within like hours. And I've seen comments online. They've said, oh, you know, within a few hours, that money was gone because they had to pay all the bills they were behind. Or some people paid their rent, you know. Well, specifically, I've seen like in online forums, some people, what they did because they just weren't sure of kind of where things were going with the country and when they'd be able to secure employment again, they maybe paid up their rent through January. So, you know, yes, they benefit through January in terms of having their rent paid, but that money was literally gone. That is money that they cannot reuse because it's already been spent and allocated. But here's the deal. Here's the deal. Again, there I go channeling my inner Joe. Look, when we hear fiscal conservatives often talk about the budget, right? Because that's what they like to talk. They like to talk about the federal budget, the federal deficit. They always talk about how we need to stop spending. We can't spend money because the federal deficit. We don't have money because of the federal deficit. Da-da-da-da-da, federal deficit. Da-da-da-da, debt. Da-da-da-da-da, look at the numbers of debt going up, 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 up. Let me tell you something that most people who were not wealthy don't know about wealth. You don't save your way to wealth, and the wealthy know that. People who are in superior financial positions, they didn't save and nickel and dime their way there. They didn't say, oh, well, I'm going to stop having my Starbucks every day and that will give me enough to retire. That will give me enough to be fine. I'm not saying that saving doesn't temporarily kind of improve situations, but long term and a huge impact, like, again, to take you to levels of not just being financially just okay and barely able to get by, but you can't save your way to wealth. The wealthy know that. The wealthy, they actually understand that sometimes, listen to this. You have to spend money to make money. The wealthy understand that you need money to make money work for you. Case in point. If an organization, let's look at it, this in the, first we'll look at it in the context of individuals, right? Someone who understands that you need money to work for you, someone who doesn't have a wealth mindset says, you know what? Let's say you have two job seekers. One job seeker, and they both just say have, I don't know, $100 in their bank account. One job seeker is going to say, you know what? Hey, I know I need to go out there and I need to look for jobs, but I need to wear this old outdated suit because I can't afford to spend money on a new suit because that's money that I'm not going to have, okay? Someone who was wealth-oriented will say, you know what? Hey, I only have $100 in the bank and I understand that I already have an older kind of outdated suit, but I understand how I will be perceived if I am wearing a newer, more modern, you know, suit. That is part of selling myself to this company. So one person held on to the $100 and didn't spend a dime. I'm not guaranteeing you that the other person who spent the money is absolutely going to get employment because other factors, you know, maybe their resume or how they performed in the interview, but specifically on the basis of selling themselves, like in their presentation, they hands down are going to have that going for them, where the person who opted not to spend a nickel or dime is not going to have that working in their favor. Looking at it in the context of an organization, okay, you have two companies. They both bring in the same amount. Their valuations are the same. One company says, you know what? Hey, we're strapped for cash. And yes, we've been doing a lot of research, but we just can't afford to spend money on advertising and marketing. Okay, and you know, whatever. Then you have another company that says, hey, we have the data, we understand our target market, we understand, you know, our product and services of quality. We're actually gonna go ahead and we're gonna invest in some advertising and marketing. First company said, customer acquisition costs too much, made excuses. Who do you think is going to be more likely? Not saying guaranteed, but who is going to be more likely to get customers? The company that spent the money to get the customers. I can tell you that from my own personal experience, that period, point blank, and this is having had several businesses, when you don't spend money, you don't make money, period. There are very few circumstances where you cannot spend a dime or spend so little and have massive amounts of success. When I don't spend money, I don't make money, period. In context, when you look at that in relation to the U.S. government, let's give an example. We don't want to, for instance, spend money on extended unemployment federal benefits. Okay, we don't do that. We save money by not spending it on that program. Do we think that people who can't secure jobs are just going to like go away? No. So what do? They then have to go to SNAP and get food stamps. They then may have to go and get housing assistance. They then have to go and get medical care on the country's dime. So not only are they getting benefits, you have to pay for administration of those benefits through those three agencies. Do you see what I'm saying? The money, it takes money to make money. Like, it literally does. And so when fiscal conservatives try to sell you on this idea of, oh, you know, we deficit, we can't spend money. You have to spend money, but here's the key. You have to spend it wisely. You can't just like throw it out there and make it rain to everybody for everything. No, you have to back it up with data. And again, bringing this back to individuals, wealthy people understand, hey, they use money in completely different ways. For instance, I'll give you kind of one example. Let's assume you have two people who have the same amount of income, okay? One person might say to themselves, hey, you know what? I don't have that much house. I'll just clean my own house. But another person may say, you know what? I don't have that much house and I could technically clean it myself, but instead I'm going to pay for a maid. People who are not wealth oriented will say, oh my gosh, you're spending money. You're just, you know, you're spending so much money and oh my gosh, money, 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 money. But people who are wealth oriented understand that, hey, I am paying for peace of mind. I am paying to not utilize my time, which is your most valuable asset, by the way. I am not paying to utilize that time and time that I could have been using while I was slaving away, just say cleaning the bathrooms or something. I can use that to actually be making money. I can use that time to be bringing in more money. Again, it takes money to make money, period. So when they try and sell you on, oh, we can't spend and we don't have the money, don't believe it, because I'll tell you what, most of these politicians, especially the ones who've been in office a long time, they're wealthy. How many of them clean their own bathroom? I can guarantee you they have a maid. Why? Some of them, maybe it's because they have achy joints and stuff like that, but most of them understand that they need to be utilizing their time in a more optimal fashion. They have a wealth mindset, but they don't present that to you. They don't apply that to you and to helping you. And you need to understand that you are being bamboozled. Now, again, I'm not advocating for just go out there and spend money willy-nilly. For instance, I've mentioned before, California to me, oh my gosh, in terms of like their spending and all that stuff, for one, taxes so high and yeah, all that stuff, but I understand that they have to have taxes. You can't have public benefit without taxing. Like, literally, I almost want to say people who are really against taxes, don't call the police. Don't drive on the public road, right? Like, don't you know, use anything that has been evaluated and approved by the FDA. Like, come on. Like, your taxes have to pay for stuff, right? So, yes, we do need responsible spending, but we do have to spend. Are we telling, and I want you, like, and it really makes me want to laugh when I think about it, but by the same logic that these fiscal conservatives try to use with you and tell you that we can't spend money on you and we have to save, why aren't they telling the companies to save? Like, literally, and when you think of it in context in relation to the pandemic, we rolled out the Paycheck Protection Program to help companies. Well, if you're fiscal conservatives, why didn't you just tell them to save their way to a better financial future? Why didn't you do that for the Main Street Lending Program? They've never done that. They never will, okay? I'm going to close this segment with this. Nancy Pelosi was right. Right now, what we're dealing with is a difference in values. It's not that these politicians are dumb and don't understand what they're trying to sell you. They understand absolutely what they're doing. They are doing it masterfully. They are doing it in a way that is for most people kind of going over their heads. They're doing it in a way that makes you think that they are actually drinking the poison that they're giving to you. They're not. Nancy Pelosi was right. This is about values. And they are going to keep trying to get you to not see what they're doing, but it is so evident. And if you don't see what is being done and that Senate Republicans literally value anything but you, it's because you don't want to see it. I don't believe that you were that dumb. I don't know you, but I do not believe that you were that dumb. If you were that dumb, you would not be listening to my podcast. You would not be listening to me. If you were that dumb, you probably wouldn't even know how to listen to me. They're not helping because they don't value you and they just don't want to help you. As I said earlier, point blank, period. Let's talk about the co-chair of the Congressional Progressive Caucus. She said, and I'm quoting directly here, "If Trump wants to go big or go home, he better see if he can control his own party." I made it very clear when I talked about how Trump is at odds with his own party. He wants something very different than them, and they want something different than him. Specifically, again, Senate Republicans who are not up for re-election. That considered, read my lips. Trump does not control Republicans. You have to understand who Trump is. If you watched the most recent and final presidential debate, let me say this. If you watched that, you noticed how Trump played to what he did during the 2016 campaign, which was to frame himself as an outsider, which he legitimately compared to most is, right? And that said, Republicans themselves, those who have been politicians for a long time, themselves see Trump as that very thing, an outsider. That said, they do not capitulate to him. They now, obviously, they like to try and give, for the most part, when necessary, they like to give the public perception that this is our dear leader. They understand the implications and ramifications of not doing that. But in their own minds, when you look at how they talk about Trump, when you look at how they undermine Trump, when you look at just even again, look at what they're doing here with the stimulus. They don't view him as their dear leader. He is an outsider who they are not beholden to. So that said, speaking specifically to those who think that Trump is supposed to corral Republicans, he can't. Because to them, to Republicans, he is not in a position to corral them. He's not one of them. He is somebody who he's just kind of, you know, he just is, but he's not the one. He's not it, right? Now, when we look at history and we look at what we've seen, most often presidents are in a position where they are looked at as a leader, but that's because our framework of a politician in the past has been completely different than what we've had with Trump. Trump was legitimately an outsider. He had not at any point in time held elected office. And that historically has not been the case for men who have become the president of the United States. They most often had held some form of political office prior to assuming the presidency. And that said, in those situations, it was natural and quite frankly a given that a certain amount of respect would be paid to someone who, as the phrase is kind of said, someone who has paid their dues. Trump has not paid his dues. And so because he has not paid his dues, he is not going to get a certain amount of respect that those who otherwise have paid their dues would get, who are in his same position. Okay. But again, the key thing to kind of keep in mind here is the fact that the president and Republicans are at odds. Let me mention, I wasn't planning to talk about this, and I'm not going to dwell here a long time, but let me mention they're calling it the third presidential debate, but we really have to call it the second because we never had an actual second debate, right? What we had in kind of that second place were two competing town halls. But when we look at this most recent debate, I chuckle when I hear people talk about, you know, who's the winner, who's the winners, who's the losers. Those who are on the Trump train say Trump just killed it. He was the man. He did his thing. Those who support Biden, those who are beholden to him, they are Biden. Oh, he was just the best. He's, Biden. Like, you know, again, what you believe and who you believe, who you support, has everything to do with your perception. But let me tell you something. There are not that many, really, if any, I'm not going to say that there are none, but most Americans at this point know who they are going to vote for. The undecided base is smaller than it probably has ever been because this is such a polarizing election. This is such a polarizing and divisive environment. But look, hands down, Trump won the debate. And also, hands down, Biden won the debate. Okay? This is not one of those situations where I'm trying to capitulate to, you know, supporters of both parties. I don't give a cahoots who you, well, actually, I do. I mean, we are a political organization, right? But in the words of Joe, here's the deal. Actually, I've taken words from both of them. From President Trump, it is what it is. And from Joe Biden, here's the deal, right? So, with President Trump, everyone looks at how poorly he did during the first debate and how god awful his behavior was, simply as a matter of human decency and respect to another person, right? Most people who are honest are willing to admit that he didn't demonstrate a minimal level, what we socially would accept as a minimal level of human decency and respect during that debate. And so for that reason, a lot of people were turned off by the president's performance, by his expression of himself and who he is, his salesmanship of himself during that debate. That considered, the bar was so low for the president for this second debate, for this final debate, that simply on the basis of the fact that he did not come off as a child who couldn't control himself, and the fact that he just demonstrated what most would consider to be socially acceptable behavior, the fact that he was able to do that and restrain himself, that won him major points with people. In that respect, he did an awesome job because he sold people on what most people thought he couldn't do based on his prior behavior. It's kind of like if you have an alcoholic and they finally are and able to kick the habit. Well, it's socially acceptable that you're not going to be running around here addicted to alcohol and getting DUIs left. I'm not saying every alcoholic does, but again, just kind of using an extreme example here. You know, that's kind of the socially acceptable behavior, you know? So should we really be praising you and singing your praises for doing the bare minimum that you are expected to do as a member of society? Then when you look at Joe Biden, same can be said for him. Maybe not exactly the same. Look, President Trump said that those who were helping to prepare him for his debate said, look, don't interrupt in the next debate because Biden doesn't do as great of a job in selling himself or expressing his points. Some people, you know, would say, oh, it's because of stuttering, but he doesn't deal with that. He has overcome that obstacle in his life. That is no longer an acceptable excuse. But here's the deal. Just as we would expect President Trump to have a minimal or be able to demonstrate a minimal level of public decency as accepted by our society, we also and equally expect a someone who is assuming the presidency to be able to clearly and articulately express and communicate points and information without kind of just rambling on and not really addressing the point. So should we really be surprised that he was able to do that? Even though in the past, some would say, well, he really didn't demonstrate an ability to do that because, and all you had to do, for instance, was like watch Saturday Night Live after the town hall. And you saw how there was a segment that I saw that you had a gentleman, again, this was on SNL. He was asking Biden a question and it was like, you know, time went on and like he didn't even answer the question. The guy was like so confused. And, you know, I mean, yes, that was funny. But as much as Biden supporters don't want to hear it, that's actually something that we get a lot with Joe Biden. And it always starts with, here's the deal, right? What you end up hearing is not really the deal. You end up somewhere far from the deal. He needs to learn the art of the deal. Ba-dum, boom. Right? Sounded good in my mind, right? So, okay, if that totally went over your head, like, you need to get it together, because that was totally funny. So, both people. Trump was able to demonstrate a certain level of, or at least a minimal level of human decency and control that we expect from most people. And Biden was able to clearly and articulately express and communicate his ideas, which we also express from someone especially who's going to be our president. So, both parties, both bases are looking at their candidates as if, yes, you've done the thing that most people think you can't do or that you haven't been able to do. But both of them have not really done things that most people would expect the person we would call our president to be able to do. So, while most people would say Biden won and most would say Trump would, if you ask me, neither of them won. Absolutely not a one of them. But, moving on from that, reeling myself back in. If we think about the economic collapse, I mentioned how Republicans and Trump are at odds. And we look at the mass amount of suffering that Americans are contending with. We always hear about, especially when we, for instance, talk about the unemployed. This was caused through no fault of their own and the pandemic came along and da-da-da-da. That's absolutely true. But we're also missing a very important part of that equation. It wasn't just the pandemic that came along that made people suffer economically. What also happened was that lawmakers failed their constituents. Utterly failed them. They failed them when they refused to not just take any old action, but take sufficient action. In the very beginning, when people were scared out of their minds, when politicians didn't know the devil we were dealing with in terms of this pandemic, they came together. They did what they needed to do. But think about this. What was the selling point as soon as we passed the CARES Act? Why did we only see the amount of money that we saw being passed to not just businesses, but to American families? This is only going to last a little while. So when they thought that this was only going to last a little while, they acted accordingly. And that is how we have ended up here. Because they did not believe that this was going to last as long as it did. That's why Mitch called for the polls. That's why Senate Republicans said, you know, people are going to have voter amnesia, so it doesn't matter that we are not up for re-election now. We'll oppose everything, not lift our fingers to do a damn thing. And by the time I am up for re-election, doesn't matter, they'll forget. Lawmakers, their refusal to take sufficient action has equally played into the economic suffering of Americans. So, as many politicians are out there saying, oh, it was the pandemic. Yeah, you're absolutely right. But also take what's the word that they love to use, especially those that are fiscally conservative? Personal responsibility. personal responsibility. They need to take a dose of that daily. Daily, your daily dose, personal responsibility. Mitch, take it. Drink it. The Census Bureau. If you don't believe that I'm telling the truth when I tell you that Americans are suffering economically, last month, in the most wealthy country in America, in the greatest country in the world, we had 22 million, not just 22 people, not 22,000, not 220, no, not, no, 22 million. What would that look like? 22,000,000. That many number of people in the United States of freaking America said that in their household, where they are personally responsible for the economy of that household, they could not even afford to buy enough food. Not because they are lazy, but because a pandemic came along and because their publicly elected officials decided not to do a damn thing about it. I said it before, and I will say it again. I will say it well after we as a country have mustered the strength to defeat the pandemic, to defend Americans against COVID and defeat it. Even after we reach that point, when I look back, if I get married and have children and have grandchildren, I will tell them that the problem with how we handled COVID-19 as a country, it wasn't Nancy Pelosi. It wasn't President Trump. It was Mitch McConnell. Mitch McConnell was the problem. And I say that now. Mitch McConnell is the problem. On Tuesday, earlier this week, he said, look, we're going to have a vote. They held a vote, and that vote was to do one thing. That vote was to spend $260 billion to extend the Paycheck Protection Program. In theory, there's nothing wrong with that. Businesses need help. But I have said before, and I will say again, when we look at the totality of the stimulus package that we were able to get passed, the CARES Act, the least effective form of stimulus that occurred within that package was the Paycheck Protection Program. Am I saying that it wasn't effective at all? No. I'm just saying it's the least effective. Don't remember the episode in which I said it, but the gist of why I say that, think about it. Businesses said, look, you give us money, we'll use that money to hire people, not hire people, to keep people on our payroll. And we only have to do it till a certain amount of time. The problem with the PPP was this. They only had to, here's the word, attempt to keep people on payroll. So what does that mean? And it was very convenient that when the $600 was given every week, that extra money to the unemployed, one of the things that we were hearing from the very people who understood the necessity of its passage was that, oh, well, we can't have it because it's a disincentive for them to work. Very convenient that they were saying that at that time. Why? Because all they had to do was attempt to get people back, which we don't know if they really attempted. If Bob the Builder, who had a building company, had, I don't know, Fred Fred Phelps. I don't know if there's a man called Fred Phelps. If there is, I'm just using you as an example. If Bob had an employee, Fred, and Bob had to lay Fred off, and then Bob could, his building company could get money, and he would just have to use a percentage of that to get Fred to come back to work. Well, think about it. If Bob said, well, look, let me act like I tried to get Fred to come back to work, and I can still keep the money for the organization, money that I would otherwise have to spend on him. I could use that and reinvest it in the business and try and sustain ourselves a little bit longer. That makes perfect sense to do. I mean, they love to make this leap of, well, yeah, it makes perfect sense to get $600 per week plus extra state benefits if you don't have to work for it. It just as equally makes sense to say, well, I attempted to get a person back to work who I'd have to pay X amount of money per week, but the business can keep it if he doesn't come back. It makes absolute sense to do that. Then you can use that money to cover your rent because Fred conveniently never came back to work. Then what else did we see? These businesses that received money, you know, these industries that received money, what did we see when the first of the month came around for those who could sustain themselves until the first? We saw mass layoffs. Why? Because the agreement under the PPP only necessitated that they kept people on until a specific date if they could agree, if they could afford to. So for this reason, yes, PPP helped during the time that it did. Yes, it helped legitimate business owners who legitimately made efforts and were able to get people to come back. It was helpful in that regard. But here's the deal, in the words of Joe, even if Bob the Builder could afford to get Fred to come back and Fred agreed to actually come back, look, if no one was buying services from Bob the Builder, after that money was gone, Bob the Builder was going to have to let Fred go anyways. So, look, again, in the words of Joe, here's the deal. Giving companies money, only just giving them money, when we have a consumer-based economy where businesses depend on consumers and consumers depend on businesses, if you only help one part of the equation, specifically the companies, you're going to end up with ghost companies. Because yes, they can afford to keep some employees, they can afford to keep showing up to work every day, they can afford to keep holding the Zoom meetings and Zoom calls, and they can keep affording to have their, you know, their offices and stuff. But at a certain point, when they don't have customers, they're going to have to cut back. And then it's going to have to go from cutting back to closing. And that's what we are seeing, I think, at this point with like 1 in 8 businesses. I am not. You had Mr. Wonderful, Kevin O'Leary, who, okay, anyways, I'm not going to go there, right? Okay, like if I can, he's like kind of one of my, okay, no. Okay, so Kevin O'Leary, whew, right? So, Mr. Wonderful, who I think lives up to the name, he, quite frankly, was correct in saying that we are essentially creating ghost companies. And these ghost companies, they need consumers. They need customers. So, in essence, politicians have to realize you absolutely have to help Americans. You can't just help businesses. For this reason, again, the PPP, in my opinion, I'm not saying it wasn't effective at all, but if we had to rank the level of effectiveness with all the programs, with all the forms of stimulus that comprised the stimulus package, that was the least effective form of stimulus compared to other forms of stimulus. That vote that we saw on Tuesday, as has been the case multiple times, not just with the Republicans, but with the Democrats in the House as well, that vote was a political stunt. It was just something that they could do so that way when they went back to campaign, when they went in front of their constituents, they could say, well, see, I attempted to do this, you know, and we needed to pause. And after we paused, we just decided to do, you know, it was just made sense of pause, do pop. Like, no, this was a stunt. In the words of the president, it is what it is. Everything, I said it before, everything in life is about perception. But especially in politics, perception is the name of the game. Which is why you need to look at what people do and not what they say. You see what they do. You hear what they say. You don't see what they say. What they see, what they say, if you see them talking, that doesn't mean a damn thing. What matters is what they do before and after they say what they say to you. These Republicans, when Mitch held that vote on Tuesday, he's counting on either people being uninformed about what he was actually voting on. And, you know, he's maybe hoping that you think that, well, we were voting on a $1,200 stimulus. He wasn't voting for that. He was voting simply and purely and only to help businesses. He was not planning to help you. He didn't vote to help you. He doesn't care about helping you. He was hoping that you would either think that, you would just assume that he was planning to help you. He was counting on you being uninformed, or he was hoping that you would give the Republicans the benefit of the doubt and assume that, oh, well, you know, they really wanted to help people, but they, you know, they knew that they couldn't agree on that. So they were just willing to just do what they thought that they could do. Look, again, here's the deal. In the words of Joe, I understand that, you know, most people are optimistic. Most people are not pessimists, right? And we like to think that people are, that people have kind of like your best interest at heart, that people are always kind of acting out of a good place. But we live in the real world, okay? The world is a scary place. Not everybody is out there trying to help you, even when they are in a position where that is actually what they should be doing. Not everybody is trying to make sure that you're okay. You know, I don't have children, but I'm talking to you how I think parents at some point have to talk to their kids, you know, whether they do it earlier in their life or later in life. They have to sit you down and they have to say, look, I understand that I have been a consistent form of care and hope and, you know, help for you your whole life, but that's not what you're going to get. I may have given you, participation trophies. But in real life, they don't give you that. Now, I understand a lot of these parents nowadays, they don't have those conversations because they are the very ones giving their kids participation trophies. And then these kids are like crazy and, you know, they're all depressed. And, you know, heck, I even saw a few years ago, they were saying you can't even write a kid's grade in the letter red because, you know, the red like did something to their minds. And oh my gosh. Yeah, I totally get the whole PC culture. Okay, but I'm having that conversation with you right now. And I don't know how else to put it to you. Am I saying that they are all nefarious actors who are out to get you and use and abuse you? No. But I'm also not saying that you should assume by default that they genuinely want to do what's in the best interest of you. Don't assume in either direction without looking at what they have done. And even when you look at what they've done, as we talked about this vote that was held on Tuesday, you need to investigate. I understand. I love politics. I would never run for political office. Never. You couldn't pay me to do that, right? But I love politics. This is why I founded this organization. Like I, you know, politics, I love it. Love it, love it, love it, love it, love it. But I don't know. I don't know. I don't know how to break it to you, kid. Like I said, like it's people really, they get into politics and they may start with good motives. They, you know, it's just how, for instance, when you look at the issue of police brutality, right? A lot of people like to say, oh, all police are bad and defund the police and those horrible, horrible people. Look, are there some people who have a bias towards either certain ethnic groups or those in serious and specific socioeconomic groups and who want to assume that those positions maybe to have negative impact? Sure, but that number is so small. I think for the majority of police, they literally have, they get into it wanting to do good work, but they may either not realize their bias or through negative experiences. You know, I kind of, when I restarted the podcast, I gave the example of sometimes how people can, for instance, be prejudiced. They can be racist, but you don't know, not making an excuse for the ideas that they have. You don't know if every, for instance, African-American woman that they have seen has been belligerent and, you know, acting in a way that is not within the confines of societal norms. So can you blame them if that is literally all they have seen? Does that mean that everybody's like that? No, but I can't blame you if that's all you've been exposed to. What that says to me is you need more exposure. Same can be said for these politicians. I think they come into this and they want to do good, but with how our elections are financed. Look, I believe the phrase, don't hate the player, hate the game. I'm going on several tangents here, but I have to say this. I do believe that we need campaign finance reform. I absolutely do. It might boggle the minds of some people when they hear that I started a super PAC, if I believe we need campaign finance reform, and I actually really don't like super PACs. But it's a thing of don't hate the player, hate the game. A lot of people, the whole premise of, if for one, if you think that you were listening to just a podcast, no, this is not just a podcast. Like this is a form of marketing that we do, but we are actually a political organization, right? And voting is important. You're hearing everybody say now, vote, 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 vote. It's absolutely important, especially when you see it translate into record numbers of voting like we're seeing now, right? But here's the deal. I'm just like so connected with Joe with me keep saying, here's the deal. Here's the deal. The people who have what we perceive to be as a society the most political power, the ones who can get on the phone with the senator when you can't, the one who can get that House representative on the phone when you can't, the one who can get the president to make moves when you can't, those are the people not who are marching out there in the streets. Those are the people who make campaign contributions. So, that said, voting is serious. Please do it. Please do it. In this political cycle, we are not really active. We are ramping up literally as soon as November 4th comes along. We are ramping up to hit go. For those who thought that, oh, well, it doesn't matter what we do right now because, you know, we're not up for re-election. Oh, buddy, you're up in the next cycle and we are coming for you. We're laying low right now. But when you see what we've got planned, we are coming for you. And we are going to do everything in our power to make sure that voters do not have the voter amnesia that they are counting on you having. But when you hear people that, you know, hoop and hop about, oh, the corporate interests and the corporate donors and da da da, and they're bad, 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 bad. Yes, they are bad. But do you not realize that you can also donate directly either to politicians themselves or to super PACs like ours to have influence that those corporate elitists have as well? And no, you might not be able to write a $50,000 check or a $100,000 check or $1 million check, but you can't. If enough Americans who can really only afford to sacrifice a cup of coffee, if enough Americans say, let's do that, we can run political ads that result in people's understanding of who these politicians are just change and actually translate into votes. This is why we are called our United Resource Pack, because this is our pack. We're the pack of the people. We're not the pack of the people who are out there as, you know, who have the lobbyists in their pocket and who have corporate donors on speed. No, that's not who we are. You know, people might look and say, well, this pack really hasn't really raised any. Like, this has pretty much come from me. Because I believe in the American people, because I believe that, yes, reform is necessary to campaign finance, but at the same time, don't hate the player, hate the game. And until we can change the game, you better believe we're in it. Man, man, oh man, oh man, oh man, oh man, oh man. Senator Elizabeth Warren, who most of you know, I went on so many tangents there, I don't even know where I was going, so I'm just going to end that thought. I went from A to B to C to D to, like, I don't know where I was going, so I'm going to stop. And I want to share with you, something that Senator Elizabeth Warren said. She said, and I quote, "The bill that Mitch McConnell put on the floor today," talking about the one on Tuesday, "leaves behind our struggling families, small businesses, minority-owned businesses, restaurants, doctors and nurses, and public health experts." Kyle Herick, president of the watchdog group Accountable US, he said, "Only voting to extend a program that failed the very people it was intended to help without fixing any of the flaws that allow it to fail is completely nonsensical." There you have someone. You don't really hear it that often. You don't hear it that often. People who are in positions of power come and say that the PPP wasn't really effective. But here, Kyle openly admitted, look, this program, you know, like it like failed, right? You're definitely not going to hear most politicians say that, because most money comes from corporate donors. And so if they agree not to help them, their corporate donations are going to stop, right? And most business owners are not going to say it doesn't work and that it wasn't really effective, because they benefit from it, you know. They always like to see anyways. But so here the guy is saying, look, if we're going to do this, we've got to make some changes. Maybe those changes are, hey, if your people don't come back, you have to give that money back. Maybe those changes are, well, hey, we're only like some, you can't keep doing the same thing that did not work and expect a different result. That is the definition of insanity. So if we attempt to do like Mitch just wanted to do, which was do the same thing all over again, something that didn't work, and just do it again. And what happened? Wait, hold up. Wait a minute. Where's the freaking fiscal conservatism? Aren't we not for just spending money and throwing it against the wall? And well, it didn't work. Like, what the heck, Mitch? I'm a fiscal conservative. We cannot fix this by only helping businesses. If Mitch McConnell does not understand this, he doesn't need to be in office. But I mentioned way long ago when I started this, before I started rambling, in another segment, that he understands this. He has been in office long enough, which in and of itself demonstrates that we are not dealing with a dumb man. He is intelligent. What Mitch McConnell thinks is that you, the American people, whether you are his direct constituent or not, he believes, he has to believe that you are just too dumb to understand what's going on. But the problem is actually Mitch McConnell. Mitch McConnell is the root of the problem. It's fall, and you know what that means, right? You can find us on Facebook. No, I know that fall and Facebook have nothing to do with each other, but they both start with the letter F. So, according to my logic, perfect time to tell you about finding us on Facebook since it is fall. Isn't that exceptional logic? By my point of view, it is. Anywho, in the description box below, you'll find a link to our Facebook page. Check us out. If you like us, like our page, we'll be more than glad to have you. Again, find us on Facebook. Look in the description box below for the link. Hey, this is Brittany. Just wanted to shoot you a quick reminder. Look in the description box of this episode and you can find a link to our website. On our website, you can find our latest blog posts. You can find our contact information. If you even want to make a contribution, you can go over there and do that as well. You can find out the policies we are looking at and targeting as an organization. You know, I say all the time that we are a tax-exempt political organization. If you want to know more about that, again, go on over to our website, our-pack.com, where you can find out everything you want to know. You can do everything you want to do. We will gladly, gladly, gladly welcome you on our website with open arms. Again, check out our website in the description box below. So that is the end of my rambling for today. It's been a while since we've had such a lengthy episode. And I knew that this episode, given the many points that I wanted to touch on today, I knew it would be longer than our more recent episodes, but quite frankly, I wasn't expecting it to be as long as it's turned out to be. But it's, you know, I had to say what I said about what I said, right? Yes, the Supreme Court seat does matter to Mitch McConnell, and it matters specifically for the reason that that is a way that conservatives in this country can have political impact well after they leave office, whether it be of their own volition or not. And so, yes, he absolutely does care about getting Amy Coney Barrett on the court. But, you know, it's not the only thing that's going on. There is, quite frankly and honestly, a certain level of cover that the issue of the Supreme Court is being used for. As much as Mitch McConnell wants to focus on that, he also very well knows that Senate Republicans are not willing to spend more money on stimulus, and he nor the president can get them to move, as has been demonstrated time and time again throughout the course of our dealings as a country with COVID-19 and our need for economic stimulus. We have data that shows us that people are suffering. It's not just a matter of looking online or just assuming. Like, you can look at the data. People are suffering. People need help. That is not in question. And, you know, this failed attempt that we saw on Tuesday was, as I see it, a waste of stimulus, excuse me, a waste of taxpayer money, what happened to fiscal conservatism? Mitch McConnell, you knew absolutely that that would not pass. You wasted our money. And most importantly, you wasted the time of the American people with that show, that circus that you put on Tuesday. But that doesn't surprise me, because all in all, Mitch McConnell is absolutely the problem here. Even withstanding the exact makeup of the Senate as we have it at this moment, with the exact same members, I think if Mitch McConnell were removed from the situation, and I don't mean in some detrimental way, so I'm not calling in any way, shape, or form for him to be hurt and harmed, I want to say this, but if he were not an elected official at this time, not just as the leader, the Senate, the majority leader, but not even in elected office, like if he were somewhere, you know, on a beach in Cancun or something, or, you know, living his life in, you know, some other way, I think we would have a very different situation, not just with what has happened in this moment, but going back to his call for a pause. So, yes, I had a lot to say, but it was very necessary, very, 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 very necessary. At the time of my recording of this podcast episode, we are still in the same place. I find it very unlikely that by the time I actually publish this, that we will have a stimulus passed. Because I've said it before, and I'm willing to bet money that we are not going to see any passage of any stimulus before the election. And what we get after the election is very dependent, if not solely dependent, upon the makeup of, excuse me, our politics post-election, who has the House, who has the Senate, and who is our president. So that said, it is Friday. Please be safe. We are hitting records and not good records in the United States. We are having a record number of COVID cases across this country. We are entering dangerous times. I know that people are dealing with COVID fatigue. I know that you want to see your family. You want to see your friends. You want to go to church, go to your synagogue, go to your mosque, your temple. You want to do all of that. You want to just go and, you know, have some pizza at the pizza parlor. But now is not the time. Now is not the time to be complacent. Now is not the time to think that, oh, it's okay to just run in the store without a mask, even though they should not be letting you run in the store without a mask. Now is not the time. You know, while I am adamant about people not really living in this hope and change reality right now, because we do need more than hope and change to overcome the struggles that we're facing as a country, I do want you to have a certain amount of optimism. I want you to have optimism when you think about the fact that, yes, our situation as a country is not ideal. Yes, we are dealing with seemingly incompetent elected officials, but there is hope in the fact that if you play your part, whether they are up for re-election in this cycle or not, you can do your part. You can play your part in making sure that they don't have the opportunity to do this to you again. That they don't have an opportunity to hurt you. Even if you go so far, especially if you're dealing with, for instance, COVID fatigue, which I think we all are dealing with, consider the fact that, yes, it's not ideal that we're going through this, but can you imagine if we went through this, you know, 30 years ago, 20 years ago, without the advent of the you know, well, we had the internet back then, but with, you know, without some of the means and modes of communication that we have, no, you may not be able to physically touch those you love and hug them and do all that stuff. But you can pick up your phone, your tablet, your computer, and you can see them. It's not ideal. And I understand that people are done with even seeing screens, right? But you make the best with what you have. And what we have now is technology, and we do have each other, maybe not in ways that are ideal, and maybe not in ways that we would prefer. But in the words of our president, it is what it is. And this is what we have to deal with, and it's hard, but we can do it. I need you to hold yourself together, and I need you to do it. You have no choice. Your family's dependent upon you. Our country is dependent upon you. Everyone is dependent upon your ability to hold yourself together, your ability to just go a little bit longer. If you don't think that you can do it for months at a time, get up in the morning and say, you know what, let me just make it through today. If you can't make it through the whole day, you know what, it's 5 o'clock, let me make it to 6 o'clock. And then as you see that you're able to keep making it, just look at your wins. It's hard. I know it's hard. But it is what it is, and we have to do what we have to do. So stay safe. As I say, some might say jokingly, but I am serious. Get your hazmat suit. Because times are tough, times are dangerous, and it's just beginning. It really is. So have a good one, and I will see you Monday.